This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Before we go to Frankie Ice, Don, you have something to say.
Yeah, a very nice job by one of our listeners by the name of David sent me the ESPN season preview where we rank the teams going into the 1999 season. Tell me if this isn't poignant. The Jets, Peter, Michael, where do you think they were ranked?
Second.
Third. All right? They were ranked third, Peter. And here's a line. Jet fans now holding round-the-clock vigil, praying for a healthy Vinny Testaverde.
I believe that. I didn't mean to frame it in a way to say that it was impossible that they were that good. What I was saying was I don't think the casual or even intense national football fan saw the Jets in like, oh my God, they're going to win the championship.
Just say you're wrong.
No, that's how I felt. I know other people feel the same way. I'm sorry. The Testaverde, Kumart, Corbett, Keyshawn team was good. The rest of the world wasn't like, oh my God, you got to watch out for the Jets. Sorry.
But ESPN had ranked third.
I didn't say that that statistically the people didn't believe
you hung around with a lot of people in Maryland that did weed and didn't follow football.
No,
and
no one's ever thought the Jets were good.
Because
no one's ever thought the Jets were good.
How could you say no one? ESPN is a national thing, and they just said they were third. How could you say no one?
Okay. Listen,
you're stoners in Maryland.
If you want to just shout me down repeatedly and act as if my experience does not count, that's fine. I've hung around football fans of all backgrounds my entire life. In 1999, actively into football, I'm not saying no one thought the Jets were good. Like, we could talk about teams we're going into this season who we think are really good, maybe on paper a top four team, but you're not talking about them the way you're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs this year. I'm saying they were never talked about in that vein, like they are going to win a championship. Thus, I don't believe they belong on the list because I don't think they were truly a Super Bowl contender. They may have been on paper, but that is not a team that was a should win the Super Bowl, maybe could compete for the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, I don't think they were viewed that way. I'm allowed to feel that way.
They're the fourth best odds going into that season. Minnesota was plus 450, Denver plus 500, Jacksonville plus 600, Jets plus 700.
Well, let's bring in Frank Isola. Maybe he could restore order.
He knows.
Frank, you know. Tell us.
Was 99 the year that Vinny blew out his Achilles?
Yeah.
In 98 was the year. So that would have been when they lost to Denver. Didn't Keith Byers have like a big fumble?
I guess Megat didn't pick up the kickoff. That was one of the big plays.
Like Parcells kind of like – Vinny Testaverde was really good, but once he went down, it was treated like, oh, wow, there's no way of winning. And then wasn't it the next year when Kurt Warner took over in like preseason for Trent Green and ended up winning the Super Bowl? Vinny Testaverde was probably underrated. No.
Right.
Once he went down, I was like, well, there goes the season. I'm not so sure about that.
No, but the conversation was going into 99, where the Jets not looked upon as a possible Super Bowl contender.
Oh, definitely were. Well, because of Parcells.
Right. Would you agree that there's a lot of illegal drugs at Maryland that Peter was partaking in at that time?
I didn't do any drugs.
Yes, and I never would partake. And when I would go back for, like, alumni things, all they kept talking about, have you seen this guy, Peter Rosenberg? He's, like, completely
big drug addict.
Yeah.
With the weed.
All right, so the Nets, disappointment or failure?
Major disappointment, and it's also a failure. I mean, you have Kevin Durant on your team. I would think for the Lakers, when you have LeBron James on your team, it's a failure when you don't get out of the first round. And for the Nets, we know the circumstances. But so when you go out and you make these moves and they sign two terrific players in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and they made the big trade for James Harden, and they've only won one playoff series. There's no other way around it. And I think if James Harden had never played in this series but Kyrie was healthy, I think the Nets would have won. But guess what? You know, the Clippers ended up winning two games without Kawhi Leonard, and they had to go on the road, and they beat Utah, the team that finished with the best record. They won a game seven. The Nets just didn't get it done. They clearly had their chances. So, it's, you know, for me, it's a failure when you have Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant kind of made it sound like that after the game. Kevin Durant knows Like, when you're that great, the only thing that really matters is lifting the trophy at the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't mind players, but it's kind of good fodder for us. But failure usually means we have to do something different, all right? So other than making sure Harden and Kyrie are healthy, Frank, what could they do differently to some of the ancillary players, some of the depth, that if they do suffer any injuries, that what happened on Saturday doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I mean, you know, players with size would help. You know, I thought they got beaten up a little bit by the Milwaukee Bucks. And then, you know, I think shooting, you know, Joe Harris had a terrific regular season. He's a very good player, but he was a major disappointment. You know, in the final five games, I think he was 18 of 61 or 18 of 62 shooting from the field. And I really thought one of the biggest moments of the game was at 111 all in overtime. Durant got blocked at the rim by Brook Lopez. And, you know, we've seen this how many times off of broken plays and scramble plays where a guy hits a huge three. I mean, one of the biggest ones in NBA history was the Ray Allen three, which came off of an offensive rebound. And the ball was, you know, was passed out to Joe Harris. He was wide open. If he shoots that, and I mean, if he makes that, they're up three with about 55 seconds to go in the game. It doesn't mean they're going to win, but that seemed to take a little life out of him. And then Chris Middleton came down, scored, and that was it. And really, even the play before that, when Giannis scored, posting up Kevin Durant. Do you know that Milwaukee had gone 5 minutes and 42 seconds without a field goal, and they had gone 4 minutes and 53 seconds without a point? I mean, think about that. From the end of regulation through overtime, and they still somehow won the game. But when Giannis went against Kevin Durant, and Brian Scalabrine said this day on the radio show I do with him, that he thought in that moment, I was like, Durant's taking a pounding from Giannis. And instead of Giannis taking a fadeaway three or backing up and trying to, like, you know, be a bull in the china shop and drive through people, he made a, you know, a tough move to the basket, had that little jump hook that hit the rim about five times and went in. And, you know, Durant, after that, missed his final three shots. Now, he missed all six in overtime. But I think the 53 minutes that Durant played and then kind of, needing, you know, guarding Giannis late in the game, I think it took a lot out of him. Maybe took something out of his legs. And clearly his last shot was an air ball.
I mean, and I was just – Mike, we discussed this earlier. Michael made the point, you know, the point on that final play was to get KD the ball. But not only would the timeout have served to them to set up a play, but also, Frank – wouldn't it have helped to just give KD a quick blow there for a minute before you had one shot to try to save the game?
It's a lot of people have said that, and I definitely think that's a fair point to make. I do know this from covering Mike D'Antoni over the years, and when Mike even coached in Phoenix and Steve Nash was his point guard, in those situations they don't like calling timeout. And I remember a playoff series once, a game five, Dallas against Utah. Carmelo and Stockton were still there, and Nash was playing for Dallas, and Don Nelson late in the game when he didn't call a timeout, it ended up benefiting the Dallas Mavericks. I get what they're doing, but in that, you know what's funny? If you look at that play, Kevin Durant passed it to Harden, and it was almost like he thought, wait, what am I doing? James Harden's not going to be able to do anything because he can't move, and he ran and got it back. So it was almost like in that moment he was a little bit tired. So I think in retrospect, I think that Steve Nash is thinking, you know what, we should have set up a play. Maybe, you know, Kevin Durant is lights out on those mid-range jumpers. And, you know, maybe he wanted to end it there by shooting a three, even though I think his foot still might have been on the line. You know, they probably could have set up for a better play for Kevin Durant. That's definitely fair, Peter.
All right, so let's play this game. It's not close to being a reality, but let's play it. We know how great Harden was when he was healthy. He wasn't healthy.
Yep.
Would the Nets have won this series if Kyrie still got hurt? They'd never made that trade, and you had Caris LeVert and Jared Allen.
That's a really good question. I do. I will say this: they definitely miss.
They miss Jared Allen.
Jared Allen.
Like, yep.
Yes, big time. The guy, you know, as I like to say, he's a rim protector, but he runs the court. And they got nothing out of DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan, I think, didn't play the last five games of the regular season, and then of course he didn't get a minute in the playoffs. I know
why is that? Why not even a sniff?
Yeah, because, you know, he doesn't move that well, and I think that they figure, you know, he kind of clogs the paint because he's not a shooter. We know that Mike D'Antoni, I think Steve Nash was like this, if the big man can't shoot, they really don't want you in there, or if you can't run the court. So it's definitely fair, but I do think this about Harden. If you look at Harden's career, he's always been very durable. And I think where you really can criticize James Harden was that he wasn't ready at the start of the season. He showed up, when he finally did show up in Houston, he was out of shape. And maybe that did lead to him suffering the hamstring injury. I give him a lot of credit for being out there from this standpoint. I do think a lot of players today, like after that first quarter of game five, there are players, and we know this, that would have grabbed the back of their hamstring. They would have made sure the camera was on them so they could grimace and then walk off the court and say, you know, I tried to play. I tried to gut it out, but I just couldn't do it. You know, he played when he wasn't nearly at his best. And every game he did keep improving, but he played a ton of minutes in game seven. And, you know, you look at him in the fourth quarter in overtime, he just didn't have it. The only shot that he made was when he banked in that three. And it was, right. You know, so obviously he doesn't mean to bank it in. You know, I give him a lot of credit for being out there, but him, you know, this is the same thing with James Harden. James Harden is a baller, that guy. After the game, he said, you know, we have to figure out our health. It has to get better. You know, so, you know, he wasn't making excuses. He knew, you know, because remember, guys, if they don't win a championship, this group, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving can still say, well, I did win a championship once before. James Harden hasn't won it, and he forced his way to Brooklyn. So he knows there's a lot, you know, there's a pressure riding on all three of those guys. But for me, there's a lot more pressure on James Harden because he's never won before.
Did not getting the one seed cost them? Would they have beaten Atlanta?
I definitely think they would have. I think they would have taken out Washington, which would have been fun because it would have been Russell Westbrook against Kevin Durant, which would have been good to see. I think they would have beaten Atlanta. And that's the thing. You know, everybody talks about the regular season is meaningless. Now, it could be tedious at times. But there was a point in the season when they pulled Kevin Durant off the court against Toronto in the third quarter because of COVID protocol. And after the game, you know, a couple of the reporters, when they asked Harden about it and they talked about, you know, the home court advantage, he said, I want to get home court advantage. It's important to get it. That's what I'm playing for. I thought it was actually refreshing to hear from a guy. And he did say, when we get to a game seven, I want it in our building. That's what happened. Now, granted, they lost. But look at the road that they went through. They had to go through Milwaukee to try to get to a conference finals. Philadelphia. They beat Washington, and then they had Atlanta. And remember, I like Atlanta. I love Trae Young, the way that he has played. But Atlanta was still down 18 in game four, and they were down 26 in game five. Like, they had to pull out a couple of minor miracles here, you know, to get it to a game seven. Then they made the plays late. So it definitely would have benefited them to be the number one seed.
After late, the Clippers have responded without Kawhi. And the way the Sixers just folded, is this a huge hit to Doc Rivers and his legacy?
Yeah, I think it is. When you look at, you know, the three losses that they had last year, he led by double digits. I guess it was technically September or August. They led by double digits in the final three games after they took a 3-1 lead and they lost all those games. And in this one, they blew an 18-point lead, a 26-point lead, and then game seven. But a big part of it, let's remember now, you know, you're paying Ben Simmons a lot of money. And Ben Simmons makes contributions. He's a very good defensive player. You know, he did have 13 assists, I think it was. But the guy is afraid to shoot. I mean, we really never seen anything like this. Even you go back to Shaquille O'Neal when he wasn't, never a great free throw shooter. But in the big games, he was not afraid to get fouled and take free throws. Giannis Antetokounmpo had two embarrassing moments from the free throw line against the Brooklyn Nets. He shot two air balls. But he also went six. He converted six straight at one point, right? And then he also, late in the game, was willing to go in the paint against Kevin Durant. In fact, maybe you could make the case that Durant should have said, the heck with it. Let me just wrap the guy up, foul him, even though, you know, we're up by 2 points. Let me send this guy to the free throw line. Giannis is not afraid. You know, so Giannis, you know, it takes forever to shoot his free throws. It's painful to watch, and you feel badly for him when he shoots an air ball. But he's a tough guy, man. That's embarrassing for him, but he's not going to shy away from taking free throws. Ben Simmons did not want the ball. Yeah, you know, because he didn't want to get fouled. How do you go five games in a seven-game series without attempting a three-pointer? I'm sorry, a field goal in the fourth quarter of these games? How do you do that?
Now
it's mind blowing.
Now next year, you know, we were just talking about the importance of home court, the importance of trying to avoid good teams in the second round. But when you want to try to keep these three healthy for the playoffs, Frank, do you think we'll see a lot of load management out of this team next year to avoid what happened with Harden? Even though Kyrie was like a fluke, bingo. But you don't want to have that happen in the regular season and possibly miss the postseason. How do you think they handle the regular season?
It's going to be very interesting, Don, because remember, we're going to go back to 82 games for the first time in three seasons next year. So you're going to hear a lot of complaining about the schedule and when they're, you know, now maybe they could reduce back-to-backs, but that's what I was thinking. If you're being realistic about it and you just look at their history, you figure Kyrie between 60 and 65 games will probably play. You would hope that Durant would get between 65 and maybe 72. And Harden, I would think, would be at 70, assuming he's healthy. He loves playing, so he's going to be out there. He doesn't like to sit out. But you're right, and that could impact them for home court advantage. And we also know this. you know, Atlanta is going to be a very good team next year. You think the Knicks will make a couple of moves and will get better. Miami had was a big-time disappointment. We know that Pat Riley is going to be aggressive and try to improve that team. I think that right now, assuming the Nets make, you know, some pretty good moves and they'll be able to get veteran players like they got Blake Griffin and like they got Jeff Green, I still think they'll be the favorites going into next season. But nothing's guaranteed. That's what, you know, you got to take your chances when you get them. And it was unfortunate. The Kyrie injury really changed everything for this team. It was huge. It was they blew them out in the first two games. But give Milwaukee credit. Think about the disappointment that Milwaukee has had. They were up 2-0 a couple of years ago in Toronto in the conference finals, lost the last four games. Last year they completely flamed out in the bubble. But remember one thing about last year with Milwaukee. In game four, they were down 0-3. And Chris Middleton, in a game that Giannis didn't play, had a great game. And it's almost as if they know now that Chris Middleton should have the ball late in these games, just as much as Giannis and just as much as Jrue Holiday. I thought Chris Middleton did not shoot the ball great, but he still made huge plays in the fourth quarter and overtime. He defended Durant once P.J. Tucker fouled out. And also, Chris Middleton was the best player on the court in game six. For a second star, he's great because he doesn't care that he doesn't get all the accolades and all this other nonsense. He never complains. The dude just goes out there and competes. That's why the Bucks, they're an easy team to root for because they're a superstar. And I've gotten to know him a bunch over the last few years. I got to know him when he first came into the league. He's just a terrific guy. He's everything that you'd want in a superstar. He works hard. He, you know, loves his teammates, his coaching staff. He gets – and think about how much better he's gotten as a player. And he knows he needs to get better. And what did he do in game six? Did not attempt a three-pointer. In game seven, yeah, he attempted a three. But late in the game, the crucial moment when they hadn't scored for more than 5 minutes – that dude put the ball on the floor, went inside, and converted that jump hook over Kevin Durant.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Frank Isola, Yes Network, ESPN, SiriusXM. Before I let you go, so today it's announced that Durant and Harden are going to play in the Olympics. And I can only imagine in the offices in Brooklyn, their heads exploded. There's no way they want those guys to play in the Olympics.
Yeah, I've always been this way with the national team. I think I give these guys a lot of credit for wanting to play, but I think once you've made the commitment one time and you've helped them win the gold medal, there's so many other American players. I hate when we put pressure on these guys to do it as if you're somehow questioning their patriotism. Really what the Olympics should do to kind of save some of these guys is just do what they do for soccer at the Olympics. It's a U23 tournament, and they let you have like a couple of wild cards. So why not just do it where, you know, the 10 of the players on the roster have to be under the age of 23, and then you can pick two wildcard players. This way you don't have to really get into these scenarios. Durant has not played a lot of basketball the last 2 years, so maybe it might not be the worst thing for him to go out there and play. I would think that Harden probably needs a bit of a break. Maybe for Durant it's not the worst thing.
Right, before I let you go, I want you to hear something that took place on the show last week. You ready?
Yep.
Here we go.
Andrew, who would you say is the best Brazilian available I could find in the Euros?
Brazil is a South American country, so they're not playing in the Euros.
What do you think of that?
Who was that? Was that Peter was correcting him, right?
No, that was Peter being corrected by Andrew.
Oh. Oh, come on, Peter. Now, you didn't know that, be fair.
Tell me, what do you think? What do you think I was thinking there? Like, what? Can you? You have any thoughts? Do you think I thought Brazil was in Europe? What do you think?
I think you probably just got it confused that it was the World Cup because the Copa America is going on too. I know you guys are doing this, but you could basically watch soccer from 12 o'clock in the afternoon until about 9 o'clock at night because the Copa America in Brazil comes on at about 5. They have two games, 5 and 7 o'clock.
Copa did factor into my confusion because I had seen a messy highlight, which made me think that the Euros were club teams. So I was thinking of a Brazilian player playing on a club in Europe. Does that make sense?
I thought
that it's random European countries that I don't care about. So I forgot. You know, and here we are.
You should taunt Andrew and just tell him that Ronaldo was the all-time leading scorer in the Euros, and Messi has never scored a goal in the Euros. Think about that.
Well, now that you know the voices, maybe you should enjoy it one more time now that you know the voices. Here we go.
Andrew, who would you say is the best Brazilian available I could find in the Euros?
Brazil is a South American country, so they're not playing in the Euros.
It really is brilliant in scope.
But I will say this. Italy, and Michael, you should care about this. Italy has Jorginho, who's a midfielder, who I think was born in Brazil, but he might have an Italian grandparent.
See?
So, and then Portugal has a Brazilian on their team.
So,
who the heck was I watching earlier today? Ukraine has a Brazilian on their team.
See?
So there are some Brazilians in the
Euro. So there are multiple times I could have been right anyway.
Why are you giving him a jumping off point, Frank? I don't get it.
Sorry, I apologize.
I'll tell you what, though, if you want a good time, Michael, if you want to start the summer of K right.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Brazil, Colombia. We should go find either a Brazilian or Colombian bar. Frank, could there be a better way for Michael to party starting the summer of K than that?
Oh, you guys would have a blast.
So let me ask you a question, Peter. So I should leave the Yankee booth in the third inning of Yankees Royals at about 8 o'clock just to do this.
Well, no, you won't make it then.
More Yankee games, Mike.
Yeah, you'll have to leave around first pitch if you want to make it on time.
Interesting, Frank. Thank you so much for your Nets insight.
Mike, you called all those triple plays the last couple of days.
Yes, I did.
You know, I was with Jack Curry. I'm going to name drop. I was with Jack Curry and Bob Lorenz when you were talking about them on the air.
Oh, really? What did they say?
They made a couple of snide comments. I sat there and defended you.
Thank you.
I didn't like that. You're my
Thank
guy.
You.
So.
Yeah, you're my guy, too.
Look out.
You know, he's a big fan of you, as he told me yesterday? Flip, big fan of the Frank man.
I'll tell you, I mean, you know this. I mean, I'd have to say this anyway, even if I didn't mean it, but I do mean it. They're really nice people over there. Very nice. It's different. You know, Mike, you and I came up to the newspaper. Well, all everybody does in the newspaper is kind of yell at each other. TV's really not like that.
No, Peter's had different experiences. Anyway, Frank, thanks a lot.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, we got some phone calls to take. Also, I think we're going to have an Omar in Brooklyn phone call. And I'll tell you what, when they lost, the first thing I thought was Omar saying, bye-bye, Nets.
Good summer, Brooklyn Nets.
I wonder how he feels today. We'll find out in a moment. 1-800-919-3776. Kayla Greco-Rosenberger and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.